sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Ok, je vais commencer avec un poème, mais en anglais. It goes like this. Perhaps I was blind to the facts stabbed in the back. I couldn't trust my own homies, just a bunch of dirty rats. Will I succeed? Paranoid from the weed. And hocus pocus, try to focus, but I can't see. And in my mind, I'm a blind man doing time. Look to my future because my past is all behind me. Is it a crime to fight for what is mine? Everybody's dying. Tell me what's the use of trying. I've been trapped since birth. Cautious because I'm cursed. And my fantasies of my family in a hearse. I'll stop here. Welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. B Blizzak, a.k.a. Mr. Shut Up Podcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Excuse me. Yeah. Before I continue, I want to remind you returning listeners that this podcast is still protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on March 8, 2023, Happy International Women's Day, at 6:34 p.m. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record labeled as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. All right. Okay. You know what? Usually I do an intro, but let's start this show immediately with... Okay, cool. All right. I should mention that it's a midweek episode. So usually there's like less, that's not less topic, but let's just run through this shit. Timer's gone. Okay. J'ai une idée là. J'avais une pensée qui m'a frappé, and as you can tell, I'm reckless right now. We're not paying attention to maybe I should mention that this the author of this podcast is the content creator is bilingual and tends to go from French to English, but right now, j'ai une pensée, si. I recently had a thought, and I'm wondering whether I should continue this podcast. Je devrais-tu le faire en français? Parce que je pense que, en anglais, je sais pas, peut-être que je vais faire du market research, là, mais ma première langue est le français. Mon problème, c'est que j'ai été élevé par des franco-ontariens. Pas par des Français, mais non, j'ai été élevé par des Haïtiens, mais j'ai été élevé dans la communauté franco-ontarienne. Qui veut dire que, malgré le fait que ma première langue, ma langue maternelle est en français, I speak English more frequently. Fuck it, I'm a victim, man. Grew up in Ontario, man, surrounded by these fucking tête carrées of the English and bombarded by American media, and then throw in the fact that I'm black, surrounded by black Americans, then you got a dude who's struggling to figure out, who thinks in English, but speaks in French, but can't speak in French. Hold on, what's that word? Yeah. You know what? I think I should do a survey. I might do a survey to the one listener out there and yeah, see how it goes. Or maybe I'll alternate. But anyways, I'm just a thought. I'm thinking out loud right now, which is what I constantly do on this podcast. And yeah, I am considering either doing this podcast in French or alternating between English and French. Oh, part of the reason is because I recently came across some podcast, clip from a video of a podcast. And I felt like I would be a unique voice in black guys who speak French. And but anyway, we'll see how it goes. All right, like I said earlier, it's Happy International Women's Day. And aside from going around wishing people Happy International Women's Day, colleagues, I spent some time on the internet fighting some motherfuckers, so fighting people who are arguing against the idea of that trans women are women. And the thing is, I was trying to be, I know I was losing patience. You know, I forget that I'm trying to reach the other person. I'm not trying to argue with them. And, I should have patience. Like, I should recognize that, yeah, you know what? Okay. Okay, you know what? If it was anything different, I would apologize to this person. But I would say, I forget that it took me a while to accept the fact that trans women are women. I had my stumble. I had my roadblocks. And it wasn't explained to me. I don't know. How did I come across it? I think what happened is because I had hit a point in my life where I was like reevaluating my understanding of the concept of men, women, and relationships. It wasn't because it was because of after a few failed relationships that hit me hard, and also questioning my own self, like the fact that I have traits that are usually associated to women, like being hypersensitive. I'm reading a whole book about that shit, and I just hit a part where I found myself reevaluating my understanding of those terms, relationship. Men, women, and I realized, yeah, when it comes to the concept of women, initially, I used to define women as just a species, like originally, when I was unenlightened, just a species that we men stick our dick in. You know what I mean? That's all it was. That's all women were reduced to. And then when I realized that, that's when I was like, okay, there's a lot about this world that I need to learn. And that's where this evolution came in. So I guess this is my way of saying that if today I am able to say trans women are women, it's not instantaneously. It didn't happen overnight. There was a few moments of just being ignorant and world not making sense to me. Like the world using the vocabulary. That was good. Basically, the fucking Bible didn't make sense. I couldn't use the Bible to describe the reality that I was living in. And then I started finding, redefining shit for myself. And here we are today. But anyways, yeah. So I spent International Women's Day, a portion of International Women's Day, arguing with someone on the internet about the idea that trans women are women. And I don't know why the fuck I use the Shut Up Podcast account to do that. But I did it. Here we are. Yeah. I'm not saying, you're welcome, ladies. That's not my point. But I'm just saying how I guess I could have done something more productive on that day. But here we are. What else was on the agenda? Oh, right. I am not a woman, but yes, I was thinking about how I attended this talk at work. And this one woman said something that made me realize or made me think about how, and also changing my definition of or understanding, having a more profound of the concept of the idea of what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a man, two things happened. One is I started to notice that a lot of my inspirations in this thing we call life weren't just men. Actually, a lot of them were women. The struggles of being able to identify with their struggle and being able to see myself in their struggle. And by being able to do that, by being able to do that, I was able to gain inspiration from women. And there was this one in particular. She was talking about how she became a higher up in management. I forget what the title is. And she was talking about how she never saw herself in that role. She never saw herself having the skill set to be that kind of person. And essentially, she's going through what I'm going through, because I've been in a supervisor role, and I'll be honest, right? I was worried about being a supervisor because I was in a spot where I was inexperienced with the environment. And I didn't think I'd make it. And the only thing that got me going was the same thing that got me going, that helped her be successful, is the same thing that allowed her to be successful in her role. And it's a supportive staff, a supportive group of people who are, like, you know, willing to share information with you and tell you, hey, no, you want to go that way. You know what I mean? Point out, no, the men's washroom are there. Women's, you know what I mean? Like, point out where, you know, help you figure out where the bodies are buried. You know, shit like that. Give you, like, that kind of information that allows you to be successful. And, I guess this is just my way of saying, you know, happy International Women's Day. And shout out to all the powerful women in my life who've allowed me to be where I'm at today. And I don't know. Here's hoping for a better future. I'm trying to say something profound as the clock is running down. I have the timer going on, by the way, in the background. So, I'm just going to leave it at that. Happy International Women's Day, and pretend I said something profound. Something you haven't heard by someone smarter than me. Anyway, whatever. All right. Keep it moving. I feel the need. So on the last episode, I gave a late honorable mentions to Run DMC. And I'm realizing there's another rapper who I feel the need to give an honorable mention to. And that's Maestro Fresh West. Maestro Fresh West. Now, if you're an American, you're probably saying, who? You might be a minority, but in Canada, Maestro Fresh West was the guy. He was, like, before Drake, Maestro Fresh West held it down. And there was a point in his career where, on the second album, where, because pro-black was the thing to be, being pro-black was the thing to be. And Maestro Fresh West fucking adopted that shit too. And he had a track called, it took me a while to find, it's called Nothing At All. And I remember hearing that track. There's a few verses in there that made me feel exactly the same way I felt when I heard about Julie Black singing the Canadian National Anthem and starting off with Our Home on Native Land. I felt the exact same way. Like, I need to pack my shit because these crackers are going to deport us all. Yeah, Maestro had a track on his, is it Conducting Things album? Hold on, let me see. What was it called? The Black Tie Affair album, which was the second one, yes, after Symphony in Effect. He had a track called Nothing At All, and he was saying some pro-black shit in there, and the Klan in the Great White North, like, what the fuck, Maestro? Don't get me wrong, I was on that pro-black shit, but I was timid about it. It's like I'm on that pro-black tip, but, you know, but I'm always scared that, you know, that white folks were going to have enough and say, okay, that's it. Get out of the country, niggas. Anyways, yeah. And you back to Haiti. Like they're going to take the time to figure out my nationality. You back to Haiti. You back to Jamaica. No, all of you back to Africa. No, all of you. I don't give a fuck where y'all going. Just get the fuck out of this country. Tourne dans ton pays ici. À droite, à gauche, mon Christ. Tourne. Pas retourne. Tourne dans ton pays. Okay. Yeah, man. So shout out to Maestro Fresh West for being on my list of rappers. Honorable mention to Maestro Fresh West to being on the list of rappers who, like Tupac said it best, black was the thing to be. I'll probably specify that I have a, you know, what's up with the title. I'll explain in my final thoughts of the episode. So I'll get to that. But right now, let's go for what's on my mind. What else is on the rundown sheet? Jesus Christ. Yes. So in the past, I probably tweeted some shit about how after the Chris Rock special, I probably tweeted something about how I didn't want to hear from white people about their thoughts on the Chris Rock special. And after listening to episode 2680 of the Black Guy Who Tips, Selective Outrage, where Rod Karen and Bossy, make sure I got her name. Yeah, Bossy Ikpi. She's stop from my with Ikpi. Wait, Ikpi. Yeah, Bossy. They call it Bossy. Bossy at a Bossy World had an amazing, what I felt was an amazing, mature, intelligent, introspective conversation about Chris Rock's recent special, Selective Outrage. It's by listening to that discussion that I realized that I've been more focused on the outrage than I've been focused on the actual fucking special. Just to say that I actually enjoyed it. So the reason, yeah, so I said, yeah, so initially I would say I didn't want to hear from white people. No, I was wrong. I didn't want to hear from immature people. I didn't want to hear from, the problem with the Will Smith, Chris Rock situation is everyone seems to be looking for a good guy and a bad guy. It has to be like, yo, you have to be either Team Chris or Team Will Smith. And what's fucked up is if you heard the apology from Will Smith, he's not trying to be like, hey, I need y'all to be on my side. He's not trying to be like Tupac was after he got shot 5 times. Where he's like, man, fuck the West Coast. West Side is the best side. You're with me or against me. Shit like that. Nah, man. I'm going to say some corny shit, right? I'm making a point here. Look. All I'm saying is, I don't see this whole Chris. I'm kind of trying to be hopeful. I'm not saying it has to happen. I'm just like, I'm a dreamer. I'm just keep dreaming, right? But I have like a high esteem of these two black men, and I'm kind of hoping, not for the sake of symbolic gesture, not at all, right? Not for hey kumbaya, but I'm kind of hoping this shit goes in a direction where they let it out. And they make peace over this shit. Just to show the rest of us how it's done. How do you go from, okay, this dude punched me, humiliated me in front of this, like being Chris Rock. How do you go from that to being like, you know what? I don't forget, but I forgive. Like, how do you move on for something like that? Maybe there is no moving on. Maybe it's going to be, Chris Rock's going to be like, fuck that nigga for life. And Will Smith is just, like, assuming Will Smith's apology was sincere, and Will Smith is just going to have to accept that, you know, there ain't going to be no kumbaya moment. It's you know, you fucked up, and you're going to have to die with that mistake. Yeah, the internet's ridiculous, man. One of the major takeaways I got from the fight between, the situation between, no, Chris Rock's special is how, man, fuck the fans, man. People will turn on you like this. It's amazing how some people are just like, yo, Chris Rock needs to get his ass whooped again. And saying stupid shit like that. Look, or talking about, oh, he's bitter. He needs to get over it. And all that shit. I had a point that I was trying to make that I remember I was going to write in. Every episode of the Black Isle Tips, I always want to write in. But in my mind, I create the email, and then it just stays in my draft folder. And if I do manage to type out an email, then I overcomplicate the shit and never send it. But this one I wanted to send, but I forgot what was the key idea. Oh, I think the key idea I would just let them know is how I appreciated the mature conversation these two had about it. And how I got myself to rewatch the special and enjoy. See, the first time I watched the special, I made the mistake of going on Twitter and letting all these fucking people with opinions, especially black folks with strong opinions. It's like the mean people are the loudest on there. Black folks with strong opinions saying, yo, if you like that joke by Chris Rock, then you are a sellout to your race. You should die. You should be escorted by the black stormtroopers and have yourself shot, you and your family. You know what I mean? Like, fucking black folks were being ridiculous. Like, I feel sorry for Chris Rock because I don't think his supporters, his supporters are being as loud as the people who are like, yo, Chris Rock is a evil person, fucking Uncle Tom, all that shit. Sold us out, making jokes in front of white folks. Nah, man. I think, when I think of Chris Rock, I think of an intelligent black man. I don't know if him and I would get along personally. But I'm saying in terms of the character he's presented on stage, he speaks that maturity shit. Yeah, sure, he's probably made some jokes that you didn't like. But I don't think his intention was, yo, I hope I piss someone off. Okay, who knows, maybe he did. I'm trying to say that Chris Rock is one of our great minds. That's what I'm trying to say. He might say, he's one of those people that, yeah, sure, he'll probably say something I'll disagree with, but not to the point where I hate his guts. Like, let's say, like a Candace Owens type of shit like that, you know? Self-serving. Yeah, I don't think Chris Rock is the self-serving type. That's what I'm trying to get at, you know? I'm just saying, yeah, I know it. I'm standing by my appreciation of, I'm going to wrap this up, standing by my appreciation of his latest special, Chris Rock, Block Your Ears. I'm not saying it's his best one, but it's still, I feel like the recipe was always the same. I'm standing by it, man. Shut Up Podcast endorses, love his latest special. And the hate, I remember looking up the word virtual. No, not virtual. Vitriol. The virtual oil? No, the vitriol. Black folks, some folks have been giving him about it has been, like, fucked up. And all the white folks who are like, yeah, nigga, yeah, come on, who are like, yeah, I'm not talking to them, man. I hate the fact that there's a Trump-supporting cracker who was like, who forgot the part about how he dissed them for, you know, the whole January 6th thing, and who are holding on to, yes, thank you for dissing Meghan Markle and for dissing and for and whatever. Look, try to focus on the positive, man. Trying to get back to what I'm trying to say. Enjoy the special and period stop. All right, okay. Two more content before I go. First one is, this is a TikTok clip that I found from, what's her name? J Draper London. You know, how about I just pull it up because I can't read her actual name. Pause.
Let's talk about perhaps the most notorious.
Pause, okay. Pause as in the actual pause. Okay, her name is J. Content creator's name is J. Draper London. All right? At J. Draper London. Again, this is shit that I found on TikTok and I found profound and felt the need to share it. And instead of writing in the comment section, I'm just putting it on my podcast. But here we go. Here we go. It's about, here. Can you please, she's responding to the question, can you please go back to speaking about things to see in London? You're getting way too political. And then she starts with a warning, discussion of racial violence and suicide. Here we go.
Let's talk about perhaps the most notorious slave ship in London history, the Zong. Now, the Zong isn't originally from London, it's from Liverpool. And in 1781, she's traveling from Africa's Gold Coast to Jamaica with 442 enslaved Africans. But it's not smooth sailing. The captain falls ill, the chain of command breaks down, and when they get to the Caribbean, they get off course. They are 2 weeks away from Jamaica with only 4 days drinking water for everyone on board. Now, the ship has insurance about this kind of thing, but they do have to be sneaky about it. If the enslaved people on board die naturally, for example, of dehydration, then the insurance won't pay out. But insurance will pay out for something called the general average, when a ship has to jettison some cargo in order to save the remainder. So the crew decides, well, let's say that the Africans count as cargo, and they throw 130 men, women, and children overboard to save on water. 10 more decide they'd rather jump than wait to be pushed. Mm. When the ship finally does make it to Jamaica, they submit their insurance claim for £3,900 and the insurers say they're not going to pay, so the ship's company takes them to court. And the ship's company wins. The court agrees that the case is the same as if horses had been thrown overboard. So the insurers go to appeal, and at the appeal, some fresh evidence emerges. The first mate testifies that while they were pushing the last people overboard, it was raining. They had plenty of water. In fact, they arrived in Jamaica with 420 gallons of fresh water on board. They were not throwing people overboard to save on water. They were doing it for the insurance money. Mm. So the insurers win their appeal, and the case becomes a rallying cry for the London abolitionist movement, which wasn't really a thing before this. Abolitionists like Alardo Equiano, Thomas Clarkson, Ottobah Kuguano, James Ramsey, and John Newton all write about it. And Granville Sharp even tries to get the crew prosecuted for murder, although it doesn't work. All these people who are kind of individually abolitionist start noticing each other, and by 1787, London has its first abolition society.
Amazing. Yeah, London. You know what's funny about... I don't have any long thoughts to say. I remember the first time believing that there was no black people in London. I apologize for my brothers and sisters in London going, what the fuck? Probably say blood clot, whatever. I can't do a y'all accent. But hear me out, man. I grew up with French people. We barely talked. If we talked about England, it was like, fuck them English. All I knew about England was Mary Poppins and shit like that. Yo, it was so, look, I thought of England the same way people thought of Canada. No one thinks of black folks. No one thinks that there's black folks there. And my first exposition, my first realization that there's black people in England, and it was a slow realization on my part, was there was an Olympic game. One of the Olympic games were in England. I'm about to give a middle finger to the time, So let me see. What year was the London? Excuse me. Sorry. Disgusting. Olympics. 2012. Holy shit. That's what's up, man. All right. I've been on Earth since 75, and it's only at 2012 that I realized there was black people in London. You know how? Because in the opening ceremonies, I noticed all these black folks there, and I was like, did they import them? What the fuck? I was convinced. They put them on slave ships. They had them on ship and brought them in. I had no idea there were black people in London. Yes, very ignorant, man. Very ignorant. All I knew is, I'm ashamed, man. Yes, I did know there were black people in France as a French person. I'm trying to defend my ignorance. Man, fuck you, all right? I was ignorant back then, and I'm not ignorant now, all right? Okay, laugh at me, man. Don't get mad at the fact that these cracklings only exposed me to the white side of England, Mary Poppins and Doctor Who and all that shit. How the fuck, man? My bad. That's all I'm going to say. But all this to say that, yeah, man, I'm reading this book. I'm still reading this book. Haven't finished it. Called Why I'm No Longer Speaking to White People About Race. No, I'm fucking up the title. Why I'm No Longer Speaking to White People. Wait, Why I Am No Longer Speaking to, God bless Google, white people about, yes, why I'm no longer talking to white people about race. And the author's name is Rennie Edelage. Anyways, the whole point is that book was like the equivalent of the Eyes on the Prize series. It made me like, it introduced me to the history of black folks in England post, during slavery and after slavery and up to now. Yeah, they had their civil rights. They had their, not Jim Crow, but they had their fair share of racial discrimination, racial violence and all that shit. That's what I'm trying to say. Right. Okay. Oh my God, I spent more time on this than I wanted to. But, But that's not true. Okay. The last piece I want to share is 2018 Women of the World Poetry Slam. And it's a poem by Frequency, Dear White People. And you know what? Fuck it. Ain't shit I can say more that she doesn't say. I know some of you are probably saying, but B, Black History Month is over. Yeah, psych, white people. You should have paid attention when I said this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green. Anyways, you must have missed that part. Yeah, this is my way of saying, yeah, we talk that black shit. And we have no regards for white fragility on this podcast. With that said, I'm going to play this piece. That shout out to my homegirl, Afua. She shared it on Instagram, and now I'm sharing it with you. All right, here we go.
This poem is inspired by a Facebook post where I asked black people, if you could write a letter to white people, what would you say? Dear white people, I don't even know where to start. In between my busy schedule comprised entirely of surviving white America, there is simply no time to write letters. Besides, any letter I write will most likely bring tears to your eyes, and I, for one, have had my fill of white tears. There are days I think you aren't worth my ink, that your whiteness is draining me of too much energy. Can't give you a taste of the tea for fear you'll colonize the whole kitchen. But today, I am too angry to remain silent. Dear white people, stop making everything about you and how uncomfortable you are. I honestly don't give a flying fuck about your comfort level. You have made my very existence an exercise in discomfort. It is time for you to make room at the table. Better yet, go sit in the living room. I am not here to coddle your feelings, not here for your amusement. No, you cannot touch my hair. This isn't a damn petting zoo. And stop coming into my office asking for the managers if you aren't already looking at one. Dear white people.
Dear white people.
Dear white people, stop telling me about this colorblind society you allegedly live in. Telling me you don't see race is the racist drivel I hope you choke on. Telling me you respect me but don't see my color is like saying you have to pretend I'm not black in order to respect me. But let me assure you, I am black, though there are plenty of things I'm not, like your sassy black friend. Stop saying, hey girl, when you see me. You ain't that slick. I hear the way you talk to Becky and Steve every day. You sound like Vacation on Martha's Vineyard, where you spent summers wading in the bitter blue of the Atlantic. How I wish my toes could touch the ocean without stepping on the bones of my ancestors.
Ooh.
Dear white teachers, why don't I know who my ancestors are? Why is only one part of my history important enough to teach? And for the love of God, stop swiveling your heads every time slavery is mentioned. Newsflash, I wasn't there. And just because I'm the only black person in this class doesn't mean you can ask me to speak on behalf of my race. I believe you really care about the opinion of black students when you stop shutting down conversations because I call a white student racist. Dear white people, why do you hate being called racist more than you hate racism? Why do you listen to Tim Wise over actual black people about the black experience? Dear white people, stop using black on black crime as a reason we shouldn't be outraged by the murder of black people by white cops. If a black person kills a black person, they will go to jail, and that is what we call justice. If a white cop kills a black person, they will get paid leave, and that is what we call justice. Apparently, justice is when a black body dies. Dear white people, every time we've written white people, we've written it in lowercase because we are tired of you capitalizing on our pain. We are angry and raw and tired and angry and raw and tired and tired and tired, but we will not rest because we know the future belongs to those who prepare for it. And you have been getting us ready for centuries.
Oh, 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 hold on a second. I gotta give her the obligatory... The obligatory
message.
You know what I mean?
Message.
I hope y'all paid attention. Message. You know, I was on the theme, not the theme, but on the idea of International Women's Day. As I was going through my journey in expanding or reevaluating, redefining what it means to be a woman, I was thinking about how this might have been after the Zimmerman verdict, excuse me, the Mike Brown, the death of Mike Brown, the protests and shit like that. And I found myself noticing the black women standing on the front line of every protest, police shooting involving black men. And front line, like right in front of the officer. Let me tell you something, right? I'm just going to confess something, and I'm going to give you another reason to be disappointed in me. First, it was not knowing there were black people in London, and now this shit is up. Every protest I've been to, I don't get near the cops. I'm in the fucking back. Fuck that. Because, one, I'm a coward. Two, I can't run for shit. If they start swinging that baton, fuck that. Yeah, man. Three, I wouldn't make it in jail, man. I have a phobia of jail, of prison, and whatever, man. Call me soft. But I'm not the guy who stands on the front line. And I'm 6 feet, 300-pound black guy. You'd think I could endure pain. Nah, not at all, right? So I'm thinking about the courage, the passion, the drive it must take for someone to stand on the front line yelling Black Lives Matter, cursing out the cops, and fuck you, whatever, man. Dude, well, I don't know if they're cursing out cops, but being on the front line, and I was amazed that it wasn't just men there. There were women there too, down for whatever. Fist up to get down, you know what I mean? Waiting for that fist up to get down. And it amazes me, and it had me thinking about how many cars that involve black women have I taken part of. And when I say black women, or just women, I've never been to still haven't been to a pro-life rally. Pro-life. Ooh, holy shit. Be careful. Chris Rock, man. His joke made me laugh. He fucked up the. I've never been to a pro-choice rally. I've never shown that kind of passion for a cause about women the same way these women have showed up for cause that involved mainly black men. Now, okay, if you show up the statistic, yeah, no, sure. You know, black women are also victim of RIP Sandra Bland, also victim of police violence, police brutality. Oh, shit. You know, we've seen the news, we've seen whatever, right? But I've always been used, and I probably even taken for granted the way black women react to shit that affects the black community. Like the way they use the pronoun we. We are affected. Like the way they stand up for it. They don't see as, I've never heard a black woman say, yeah, you know what, now nah, statistically, that shit only affects black men. Fuck that, we are out. Holler at us when the cause involves us. You know what I mean? Like birth control. I don't know. So just see my ignorance right now. I can't even list you issues that only affect women. But they can list all the, you know, police brutality. Bang, 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 bang. Usually when we talk about the black community, we always talk about it's as if we reduce it down to just black men. Issues that affect us. And we take for granted that women jump on our, you know, assist us, stand by our side on our car. Like, we forget that black women were in that slave ship next to us. Also freaking the fuck out like we were. I can't speak to the experience of our ancestors on that slave ship, but I know it wasn't great. It wasn't comfortable, but we forget that they went through that shit too. And fucking, who knows, probably looking down, I don't know, maybe it's, fuck, probably like, hey, our protectors failed us. I wonder if they had thoughts like that. Yeah, they were, I don't know, I've never heard those stories about how, you know, they spent the entire slave ship going, fucking niggas, how the fuck y'all let these white men put us in these chains, you know what I mean? I don't think there was, no, it was all like, we are in this together. That's why it was at that point. That's the bar for you to call yourself an ally of black people. You gotta be down for the cause. You gotta be dying in the trenches with us to consider yourself an ally. That's why I said, you know, shout out to John Brown, because, you know, he took the, you know, the bullets got to be coming at you too, to be called yourself an ally. Someone posted a question about, yeah, but whatever. I'm just trying to get, you know, right now the focus is on black women. And shout out to Duvernay, the author, the director of Selma. Wait, did I get that right? Is that what she called it? Selma Eva. Sorry, I'm bad with names. Even of my heroes. By Ava DuVernay. Right, because I rarely trust my memory. Okay, Ava DuVernay. Yes. What I love about Selma, what's amazing about that show is how the focus. I remember I mentioned this already in past episode, but I'm assuming you haven't heard it. But yeah, no, in a past episode where I remember when Selma came out, it was being advertised. I'm like, I'm not going to watch that movie. Fuck yeah. What can you tell me about Martin Luther King that I haven't heard already? I'm going to watch the movie. And her focus, or she highlighted the contribution of women in the civil rights movement, their involvement in the March on Selma. Is it Marches to Selma? Selma historical drama by everybody. It's based on Selma Montgomery voting rights marches. Yeah, the how women played a key role. You know, white, black, well, mainly black, but you know, on like if you need a movie to inspire you to to think about the contributions of women in history, Selma would be on that list. Definitely. You know, I should put that in the show notes. But yeah, man, Selma. All right, whatever. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that, man. Okay, let's jump to the final thought so we can get the fuck out of here. And like I do, since we're separating, like, this is my way of saying we're now on the final act of this podcast. And here we go. Okay, final thoughts. Okay. Actually, it's more, what's up with the title? And there's a link between the final thought for today's podcast, today's episode, and the title of this episode, and the poem that I read by Tupac from his track, Only God Can Judge Me. And it's Cautious Because I'm Cursed. Oh, right. Okay, so this thought came to me after hearing I'm going to play this piece by this content creator. Her name is Bertrude. I'm not saying it in English. Pardon, pas Bertrude. Bertrude. Let me make sure I'm being exact. Yeah, Bertrude. And she is a Haitian American dedicated to telling Haiti's true story. Got that up from her website. She's a CEO, co-founder of P4H Global. Oh, wow. Oh, man. Okay, of course she's educated. Yeah. And Haitian-led nonprofit training teachers to transform Haiti. Oh, wow. She's a believer, man. Yeah, man. She's making history. I know that's right. Anyway, yeah. So she shared this, and I'm going to play this clip. It's called The Duvalier Regime, Part 1. And here we go.
I released a video yesterday about the Duvaliers, Papa Doc and Baby Doc, the father-son dictators who ruled Haiti for nearly 30 years, from 1957 until 1986. And the response, the comments, have been so rich and heartfelt. This is a challenging topic because there are so many feelings, so many traumatic memories from this era. Tens of thousands of Haitians were murdered. Many more were sent into exile or tortured during this era. And at the same time, some Haitians remember security, stability, construction, and development. And given our current challenges, some Haitians want that back. This is an important discussion because when we talk about the Duvalier regime, we're not talking about just Papa Doc and Baby Doc. There's a social, and cultural, and philosophical discussion underneath. We're talking about basic human rights, freedom of speech, race, color, national identity, security, sovereignty, stability, development. We're talking about Haiti's future. So I'll be developing a series on this topic that's guided by our discussions and your comments. And I'll kickstart our series with a story my dad shared with me a couple years ago. Oral history is big in our community. There's a big sturdy bridge by my house in the north, and it was built by Papa Doc. Papa Doc asked an engineer, "How long will it take you to build me a bridge over there?" The engineer said, "A month." Papa Doc said, I'll give you two. Make sure you build it well, and I will pay you well. I'll be back. 2 months later, Papa Doc returns, and he likes what he sees. He then calls for the engineer, and he says, bring your family. He asks for the engineer to stand underneath the bridge with his family as Papa Doc and his entourage ride back and forth on top of the bridge to make sure that it really is sturdy. This story provides a small glimpse into the dichotomy of the Duvalier regime. There was some development, but at the cost of basic human rights.
Yep.
I released a...
There we go. Actually, I was going to play the original. You know what? I'll add it in the show note, assuming I remember. I can write that down, but I'm trying to wrap up this episode. But okay, where I'm going with this, right? Hearing that piece, it just set me down memory lane. It reminded me. I remember several conversations my parents, my dad specifically, would have with other Haitians, and it's not just my dad. It's just like it's a common thinking about when they were talking. Look, first of all, it's not unique to Haitians, but fucking Haitian parents love to talk about politics. Love to talk. Oh my God, it's just fuck Haitian politics. They love that shit. And I do remember. Okay, one, I do remember the Duvalier topic being a controversial topic. Two, I am not surprised this woman, this content creator, is getting got a lot of. I'm not sure. Yeah, got a lot of flack about speaking about Duvalier. She's just a teacher. She's like, she's a scholar, right? And she just talks about that shit. And fucking, for some Haitians, yo, some Haitians are like, yeah, man, don't talk shit about Duvalier. And some Haitians are like, yo, I got personal memories of him killing, hurting, whatever, doing some shit to relatives. Like, you could easily have a debate about Duvalier, whether he was good for the country. And whether he was good for the country and the good old days and whatever. And you can have a debate that could turn violent because Haitians are fucking can be sensitive, very sensitive, and not the, oh, let me articulate my feelings sensitive. No, it's like 0 to 100 machete getting close to get swung to, you know, I'm not saying we're savage. I'm just saying fucking passionate. That could turn fucking violent. And especially if you got local. All I'm saying is, it had me thinking about how growing up as a Haitian, even though I was raised with parents who try to raise me as Christians, if I was honest with you, a part of me believed that being black, and not just black, being black and Haitian meant we were cursed. God's cursed people. God's special little cursed. And that's probably why I get so emotional when I hear the N-word, when a white person drops the N-word. Because it's like, I feel like they're just reminding me. It's another way of saying, yeah, even God don't like you. Even God is like calling you a nigger. You know what I mean? It's just that story of the reason why it's so connected to Duvalier, because I remember hearing this notion of when you look at all the shit you going on in Haiti, all the violence, all the ugliness, the political upheaval, fucking after Duvalier, there hasn't been someone to take his place as long as they were able to take his place. And I remember someone saying this notion. It's like, nah, Duvalier needs to come back because Haitians need, like, to be ruled with an iron fist. And it just made me think, it's like, fuck, it's if that's what it takes to get the country back in order, how do you not believe we're not cursed? Like, we need a fucking asshole. We need someone who could inspire fear in motherfuckers and be like, yeah, $2 for me, $1.60 for the rest of y'all. You know what I mean? Like, we need a motherfucker, a piece of shit to put the country back on track. I know it's funny. I think about, you know, like those same people who will talk to you about how the good old days of Duvalier can't tell you, can't elaborate on why they left while that month. Like, if this motherfucker was so great, why did you leave the country in the first place? Don't tell, you know, it's like, you know, I've never been able to get a clear answer on, it's like to them, that was the good old days when that motherfucker was around. Anyway, just getting back to what I was saying. I remember growing up Christian, and even though I would say shit like, you know, I'm blessed and highly favored, whatever Christians say, you know, I'm God's, you know, God loves me and all that shit. Even though I was saying that shit deep down at the bottom, deep down, like, you know, I was really, a part of me mainly believed that I was cursed, not just for being black, but also for being Haitian. Like, it's it was so fucked up. The reason I bring this up is because I remember having a conversation with my therapist about that shit. She's also Haitian. And I said, you look at all the shit this our country's been through. How do you not believe we're cursed? And I remember she said, nah, we're not cursed. And even though she said it, even though I know she's a professional and all that shit, a part of my brain was like, yeah, don't listen to her. What does she know? Like, there's a rotten core inside of me that just grew up with the idea that me and everything about me is fucking cursed, and no one can say anything differently. Can't say anything about, like, I don't know how one person stops feeling like a curse. I'm not a bad person. I haven't done anything to. Like, there are people who have, let's take, for example, Will Smith. I want to believe that he feels like shit for what he did to Chris Rock, whatever reason he could justify, whatever, right? But I think he regrets those acts. Not just what he did to Chris Rock, but the image of him being, not being a good person. I'm sure it's fucking with him. Like, I don't have those kind of memories. And yet, I still feel like I'm a fucking curse. It all started out by being black. My mom can tell you stories about how. There's also the factor that I am a sensitive, hypersensitive human being. And so as a child, that fucked with me. You know, what made it worse? Okay, I think what makes it worse, there's one thing of being hypersensitive, but it's even worse when you try to pretend that you're not hypersensitive. You just make the situation even worse. So I didn't accept it. Yeah. So you're surrounded by people who are like, I think this is what I'm trying. This is the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to say. This is what I'm trying to say is, because I grew up with people who were like, "Yo, stop being a little sissy. Stop being a little bitch." You know what I mean? Like they saw that hypersensitivity as something that's broken in me. And because I didn't have the means to process these feelings, this I'm absorbing this shit. I'm absorbing, like, all us black kids who have grown up hating ourselves. But I think for me, I absorbed it even more, and because I couldn't process those feelings, now I'm an adult fighting the idea that I'm a cursed human being. Like, I stopped believing in white Jesus. Like, I still have a spiritual side, but, like, you know, there's a bit of atheism, there's a bit of, yeah, there is no God running through me. The only time I'm able to get myself to believe in God is when I'm trying to say that, yeah, there is a God, but he thinks we're cursed, but I'm a curse. He looks at me as a curse. And that's how I ended up with today's title. Cause I remember remembering that line by Pac where he says, cautious. How's the line go again? He goes, cautious cause I'm cursed. And the whole line goes, I've been trapped since birth, cautious because I'm cursed, and fantasies of my family in a hearse. And yeah, but for me, you know, Pop, he wrote it one way. This is me. This is me being a preacher interpreting a line that was meant differently. But I'm interpreting for my own sense, for my own unique purpose, for my own understanding. But that line when he says, I've been trapped since birth, specifically the last four words, cautious because I'm cursed. I connected to those four words. Yeah, I did grow up being cautious. Like, cautious that, yeah, cautious and believing that I'm God's curse. I'm sure I'll snap out of it at some point. But right now, as you listen to this podcast, there's a part in my mind that's lingering with the belief that, you know, of being a curse. And a lot of it has to do with just growing up Haitian, as a Haitian, where, and you're just constantly told every, except for, you know, oh yeah, y'all fucked up. That revolution, yeah, even pissed off God. Fun fact, by the way, we're talking about London history. So in Haiti, if you don't know, look up the history. Rouge et Bleu is up in this bitch. When I talk about Rouge et Bleu, I'm talking about 1804. Anyway, I'm talking about it being Haitian. But yeah, Haiti fought for their, Haiti fought for to end slavery. The United States had to go to war to end slavery. You know, in England, you know how they ended slavery? By fucking paying. By telling the slave owners, hey, look, what if we paid you, compensated you, would you then stop slavery? They were like, okay, all right, you know what? All right, yeah, we'll stop slavery, but you motherfuckers better pay us back for how much we've invested in these motherfucking slaves and how much we lost, we threw out in the water. Yeah, they had to pay for it. Sure, it ended. Like, you know, Canada likes to celebrate. Okay, granted, Canada was in a country when slavery was abolished, but they like to talk about, yeah, we didn't have any slavery. Yeah, go fuck yourselves. You were in a colony because it was outlawed, and the way they outlawed slavery was by paying for it. Hold on, what was I going with this? Oh, because I was just trying to do a callback to London, but yeah. You know, it's kind of disgusting. If I'm holding on, is because I know that I'm ending. Fuck it, I'm just going to leave it like that. I'm going to leave it on this sour note, but still say happy International Women's Day. That's the only positive I can say, that, you know, that we have the time to take the time to acknowledge International Women's Day. And yeah, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm ripping you off. You know, fuck, man, how you gonna end on this sad note? I don't know. I guess don't be sad because I have this cursed belief. I'm rejoiced on the idea that I still believe that it's a temporary thing. I'm going to unlearn it. I'm just saying, I'm acknowledging now. And if you can relate to the idea of going through life feeling like you're cursed, holler at me, man. That's a lot of what I do is I'm hoping to connect with similar thinking. Someone who could say, yeah, no, I used to have that belief, and this is how I snapped out of it. So here we are again. Happy International Days, and this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast 058. Oh my God, learn to count. 059, cautious because I'm cursed. Thank you for listening. Holler at me on Twitter at bblizak or at Shut Up Podcast. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Hey, you know what? Holler at me if you think I should citer français, bilingue, c'était bilingue, puis you'd be, I don't know, man. I need to send me some stats. Yeah, man, I would love to go on French podcasts and talk about my podcast. Or no, not have debates. Yeah, I'm not like Destiny. Not debates, but intelligent-minded black folks. And, you know, talk some real shit. I don't do the debate shit. I don't do the attacking people. Whatever. That's not my thing. But I would like to have intelligent conversation with other black folks about the shit that I discuss on this podcast. So Shut Up Podcast 411@gmail.com. To subscribe to the podcast, go to the website, and there's a link to the RSS feed, or go to Google or Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. Peace.